It is unlikely that there has ever been any issue in modern times where one side was so completely frozen out in the scholarly journals, in the news media, and in the press. And yet, this has been despite the fact that this issue of the Equal Rights Amendment is an issue of fantastic effect and significance in the distribution of power in our country, in the military, in the marital context, in state and federal relations. We wonder why it has been not discussed on the issues in so many areas where it, I think, should have been. So let's start off with a brief history of the subject. The Equal Rights Amendment was first introduced into Congress in 1923. It was born in the era of the Women's Suffrage Amendment. I'll recite it for you in case you don't know it by heart. It says, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." Section 2 says, "Congress will have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article." And Section 3 has it go into effect within 2 years. During the next approximately 45 years, all those Congresses had the good judgment to leave this amendment decently buried in the bottom drawer. During the time when it emerged a little bit, it had attached to it an amendment known as the Hayden Clause, which said nothing in this amendment will be construed to deprive women of any of the rights, benefits, or protections they now possess. But in 1971, a group of women went down to Washington, a few dozen women, and they lobbied up and down the halls of Congress, and they convinced the congressmen that now is the time the American people wanted the Equal Rights Amendment. And so Congress voted it out by overwhelming majorities. Only 23 voted against it in the House, only 9 voted against it in the Senate. When it came out of the House committee, it had attached to it something called the Wiggins Clause, which exempted the effect of ERA on the draft and women in combat. But that was taken out on the floor by the ERA advocates who wanted no exceptions and who did want women drafted and put into military combat. So they removed that clause. When it went over to the Senate, 9 amendments were proposed to exempt various effects of ERA. The amendments were all defeated, and ERA was voted out in its strict, absolute language. There followed a tremendous rush for ratification, accompanied by all kinds of strange maneuverings. For example, the Delaware legislature in one house passed ERA even before it was passed by the U.S. Senate. Hawaii passed it within hours. Alaska passed it only in Section 1. Apparently, they must have done it by phone. They didn't hear about Sections 2 and 3. Some states passed it within 10 minutes. It was passed very much like in a body like this, somebody were to stand up and say, "Let's all give 3 cheers for the ladies." Everybody but a clod would vote rah, rah, rah. And that's the way it went through the original legislatures. Within 12 months of the date that it came out of Congress on March 22, 1972, it had passed 30 of the 38 legislatures that are needed for ratification. In the succeeding 4 or 5 years, they got 5 more states, but 5 other states rescinded their previous action. Now, the original ERA, when it came out of Congress, had a preamble to it that gave it a 7-year time limit. It said ERA would become part of the Constitution if ratified by 38 state legislatures within 7 years. And as they saw the end of the 7 years coming, they knew they weren't going to get the 38 states. And so they went back to Congress and got Congress to vote them an unprecedented extension, which, of course, was changing the terms of the original amendment. But nevertheless, they passed it. And passed the extension by a simple majority instead of by the two-thirds requirement for constitutional amendments, and they got their additional 3 years. The 3 years gave them until June 30th, 1982. The ERA advocates devoted those last 3 years to hammering away at the states where they thought they had the best chance to pass. In Illinois, the state legislature voted on ERA every year for 10 years. The Florida legislature voted on it about 9 years. States like North Carolina and Oklahoma voted on it at least 6 different years. Illinois, in the spring of 1982, became a sort of a three-ring circus as they attempted to push it through the legislature. On the first floor, we had the hunger strikers, one in a wheelchair, some occasionally being carried in on a stretcher, as they were hoping by this hunger strike to intimidate legislators into voting for ERA. On the second floor, it was on the third floor, they had the chain gang, who chained themselves sometimes to the door of the governor's office and sometimes to the door of the Senate. At times, they would come in and lie down in front of the rostrum of the speaker, hoping that that would prevail upon legislators to vote yes. Then on one day, they came in with plastic sacks of blood that they had gotten from the butcher place, and it was pig's blood, and they wrote with it all over the marble floors, especially the names of the legislators they hated the most. Maybe some of them are here tonight, I don't know. And then, of course, this was also the state where one of the advocates offered a legislator a $1,000 bribe to switch his vote from no to yes. She was ultimately convicted, and the conviction was upheld on appeal. Well, they didn't get it, and it died on June 30th, 1982. And it appeared to rise again from the ashes after that. It was introduced again into the U.S. House with great fanfare in January of 1983. Speaker Tip O'Neill gave it his full support with the number HJ Res 1. And we were again told by all the press it was going to pass. Speaker O'Neill brought it up on the 15th of November last, and it failed. Probably no issue has ever had so much power going behind it. They certainly had the full support of the President of the United States during the Ford and Carter administrations. Under Jimmy Carter, they ran their campaign right out of the White House. They had most of the governors. I think it's fair to say they had 99% of the media in this country. But they couldn't sell it. And during this period of time, ERA was put on referendum quite a number of times. It was nearly always defeated, and defeated rather massively, as it was even in the state of New York, where it was defeated by 420,000 votes. In the last 6 months of the ERA campaign in 1982, the advocates raised a great deal of money, and they were spending $1 million a month on television targeted in the states where they hoped it would do the most good. But they didn't have a product to sell. It is very difficult to sell something as an advantage for women when the first and most immediate effect is that 18-year-old women would have to register for the military draft. I don't think if you spend $1 million a day on advertising, you can sell that product. But at any rate, they spent their money and they did not win. The product that they were trying to sell, they were always unable to show that it will do any good whatsoever for women. It is clear that it has nothing to do with the employment picture because our employment laws are already sex neutral. The only way that ERA would do anything in the employment law is to wipe out Dothard versus Rawlinson, which is the case that upheld the BFOQ, the bona fide occupational qualification, which kept a small woman from getting a job as a guard in an Alabama maximum security prison. It incidentally doesn't keep women from getting jobs as guards in other maximum security prisons, apparently only Alabama, which the court described as having a jungle atmosphere. But that's the only way that anybody can show that ERA will do anything in the field of employment, because the employment laws, the Equal Pay Act, the Title VII, the Equal Employment Opportunity Act, are already sex neutral and in conformity to the ERA mandate. These laws prohibit sex discrimination in hiring, in pay, and in promotions, and they have a whole enforcement mechanism called the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. EEOC has won enormous cases and made big companies pay millions of dollars in back pay settlements, such as the $30 million they wrung out of AT&T, another $30 million out of U.S. Steel, and so forth. So all those laws are on the books, and ERA does not add anything to them. Now, the issue of the draft and the military combat was always a very core issue in this matter of ERA, because that is the one area where you meet a matter of total compulsion. A lot of other things, if you don't like the effect, you have a way to escape one way or the other. But when it comes to the matter of the military draft, if you get your greetings from the president and you don't show up, you're liable to have the federal marshals come around and arrest you and prosecute you for disobeying the law. And this is also an issue in which there was never any dispute about what the effect of ERA would be. All of the advocates over all these years have always admitted quite readily that yes, women would be drafted equally with men. Yes, ERA would require the draft registration of women. Yes, women would be put in combat like men. Yes, the Equal Rights Amendment would make unconstitutional the male-only draft law and the law that excludes women from military combat. And by 1980, when the ERAers realized they were again running out of time and they weren't getting any more states, they apparently adopted the strategy that if they could just hurry up and draft women now, they would take away from us our best argument. So they sold Rosalind Carter the idea, and she sold Jimmy Carter the idea, who then proposed in his State of the Union message in 1980 the equal draft registration of men and women. That was in his State of the Union message in 1980. Well, even his Democratic leadership in Congress could not go along with that. This idea was overwhelmingly defeated in both houses of Congress. But the advocates of ERA were not dissuaded. They participated in the lawsuit that found its way up to the Supreme Court under the name of Roster versus Goldberg. The National Organization for Women was among those who filed a brief in that case, claiming that the exemption of women from the draft made women second-class citizens and that service in the military would be a politically maturing experience for women. And so they pleaded with the court to order the immediate draft registration of women just like men. They lost in June of 1981 when the Supreme Court upheld the Sex-Discriminatory Male Draft Registration Act. And it is clear that would be overturned by ERA. All of the advocates of ERA have always admitted the effect in this area. The effect in the area of abortion is another very interesting area, and in particular, the effect on abortion funding. Many of us had realized and talked about this effect since the very beginning of the debate in 1972. But rather uniformly, the advocates of the Equal Rights Amendment tried to deny that there was any connection between ERA and abortion. When the Supreme Court upheld the Hyde Amendment in Harris versus McRae in 1980, some of them changed their tune. Harris versus McRae was the case that upheld the Hyde Amendment, which bars the spending of federal taxpayer funds to pay for abortions. Harris versus McRae was upheld by 5-4. And in response to that, there apparently were some of the ERAers and the abortionists who thought, well, now is the time to go for abortion funding under the state ERAs. So the American Civil Liberties Union filed a brief in lawsuits in three states, Massachusetts, Hawaii, and Pennsylvania, making the argument that the state Equal Rights Amendment in those states required the spending of state tax funds for abortions because they wanted to get the abortions paid for with taxpayers' money. Now, how could they possibly argue that when obviously ERA doesn't mention abortion? Here is their legal argument. Their argument is really very simple. It is that abortion is a medical procedure that is performed only on women. Therefore, if you deny tax funds for a medical procedure performed only on women, you have discriminated on account of sex within the meaning of the Equal Rights Amendment. It was not clear for a while what the court was going to decide, but just a few weeks ago, the state court in Pennsylvania did buy that argument under the state Pennsylvania Equal Rights Amendment. And so this has established the connection between ERA and abortion funding beyond the shadow of a doubt. There's a lot of other corroboratory evidence, such as the opinion of the Supreme Court in the Newport News shipbuilding case last year, in which the court said that it is now clear that discrimination on account of pregnancy is by definition discrimination on account of sex.